Welcome to Share Talk. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Matthew Idions, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Rose Petroleum. How are you there, sir?
Very good, thank you very much.
Now, it's the first time we've covered your company, so could you tell us a bit about yourself, the board of directors, and what the overall strategy is of the company, please?
Certainly. I've been with Rose since inception, which we listed on AIM as Vein Minerals back in June 2004. I was commercial director back then, was a non-exec director for a while, and then came in as CEO when we did a transition from just mining into mining and oil and gas in 2013. We've multiple assets ranging from uranium, gold, silver, copper, and of course oil and gas, which is our sort of main focus at the moment. So we have assets in the US and Mexico, and we're also pursuing projects in Cuba as well.
Could we highlight, obviously, the board of directors that are involved with Rose Petroleum and maybe a little bit of their history?
Certainly. So we've got our chairman is Philip Jeffcock, who has numerous years of experience. He used to work for Goldman Sachs. And finance director is Chris Eady, who was 17 years qualified experience with cable and wireless historically, and has a significant experience on AIM as a finance director. And then operationally on the mining side, we have Chris Hefton, who again has been with us since sort of December 2004, I think he joined us. And he has lots of experience with Homestake, Barrick and Freeport-McMoRan. One of the key things to when Vein was first listed, obviously previous name of Rose, was the Freeport-McMoRan database. And Chris was obviously had lots of experience there with the original geologists who founded the company. And then on the oil and gas side on the board, we have Kelly Scott, who is sort of 40 years experience in oil and gas, ran projects in offshore and onshore all around the world, and has a huge, vast experience in the industry.
So if we can look more in depth at your assets then, please. If we can start with the mining side of things, could we have a look at, first and foremost, the Mexican project?
Yeah, so the SDA, our main asset really in Mexico is the SDA mill, and which we announced quite recently that we've been, it's been bid for by Magellan Gold, who is doing their due diligence at the moment, and will pay $1 million in cash and $500,000 in stock should the process continue, which we hope it will. The SDA mill is a flotation and crushing mill, which we originally founded when we had our first mine, which is Diablito, which we started in 2004, mined it out. And then since then, we've done joint ventures with owners of mines until, I think it was 2015, when we changed over, because of the drop in the price of gold, we changed over to toll milling only to keep the operations going there. And we've been doing that for sort of 18 months or so. And now, obviously, we're focusing really towards the oil and gas assets. So Mexico, we put up for sale. And Magellan came along and made us an offer.
In relation to the cost of the mill and the potential sale there versus your market cap, what will that money potentially be used for going forward?
So obviously, I mean, our main and exciting and the sort of the biggest game changer for us is our Paradox Basin oil assets. The Paradox Basin is in Utah in the U.S., southeast Utah. The basin has been developed just directly south of us, about 12 miles south of us, by which was the operator was Fidelity Exploration and Production, who had huge success there between sort of 2009 and 2015 when they sold it to Wesco Operating, and that in sort of the first quarter of 2015 they were producing 2,100 barrels a day. Multiple wells in the region have produced, you know, hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil, with a few producing more than 1 million barrels of oil. And so it's a very productive basin. We have a 75% working interest, which we're earning in through a company which we did a deal with called Rocky Standard Oil Company back in 2014. We've been working on that project since. We had Ryder Scott do a reserve report for us, and they came up with prospective recoverable resources of 1.1 billion barrels of oil and 2.2 trillion cubic feet of gas over 15 intervals in the basin. Fidelity identified 10 of those 15 that they were targeting. The main one was the Cane Creek interval, which was the deepest one, which is the one that they actually mostly produced out of. We think the basin has huge potential for us, and obviously that's a vast amount of oil. We're going to go in and the thing that Fidelity did is they unlocked the key to the basin, which is really is shoot seismic and identify where the highly fractured areas are. It's a very overpressured prey with them, and you therefore try and identify where the natural fractures are. You don't frack the wells, so you literally drill in vertically. If you target correctly, you'll hit the fractures and you'll get excellent IP rates, initial flow rates. They had 2015, I think Fidelity had flow rates there on four wells that they were operating, and they ranged between 800 barrels a day and 1200 barrels a day. Now, obviously, that's an unconventional play, so the decline rates are quite aggressive. They're still very good rates, and payback's very quick on these wells. And then they flow for a very long time, steadily, but a lot less than that. As the sort of, million barrel plus some of the wells have produced over sort of 30, 40 years.
Could you just let us know the sort of rough target depths and potential costs for those, just to highlight them as an example?
Yes. I mean, around us, we'll be looking between the clastics that we'll be targeting between sort of, up to 10,000 feet deep, around the 7,000 foot to 10,000 feet deep. Depending on whereabouts in our acreage we will be targeting. That is feet, not meters. The well costs, when Fidelity were drilling, which was a couple of years ago, we had their well costs at around 10 to 12 million, depending on completion. I think obviously the prices have gone down a bit since then. If we said a sort of a 10 million mark would be a sensible figure, I think, for our first well. Our own internal economics gives us a sort of break-even price around $30 a barrel, $28 to $30 a barrel, somewhere around there. So, $50, $47, we're still making money, even in the current environment, which is obviously good.
Now, what are the plans for funding going forward?
Well, obviously, the plan at the moment is we are permitting the 3D seismic shoot, because that's vital. That data for us is hugely valuable. And we're doing a 61 square mile seismic shoot, which we've been permitting, and it's taken the last 2 years. Obviously, it's a very big area to permit. I mean, it takes a lot longer than a drill pad does because of the size of it. It's obviously 61 square miles. You have to do a lot of cultural and environmental assessments in that area. So it takes time to get those together. But we are, as we've announced, we're expecting that approval relatively shortly now. We are working closely with the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, and we put forward our EA for a 15-day comment period. We had a comment back that was of importance and it needed addressing, so we have addressed that now. Those changes to our shoot have been put forward to the BLM. The BLM are reviewing those, and we hope to be putting forward for another 15-day comment period relatively shortly, which then should get the approval, and then we will be off to the races. The physical shoot itself can't start until H2 because of environmental, it's basically sort of social and environmental issues that regulatory issues allow you to only shoot during a certain period, which is fine. So we'll be hitting that in H2.
If we can have a look, obviously what a lot of people have been looking at over the last 6 months is the price rise based around uranium. And obviously your uranium project.
Yes.
Could we have a summarization of that?
Yeah, so we, I mean, we have a state land and federal land. A lot of the federal land we had was subject to the withdrawal of lands that happened some years ago now under the Obama administration. We are hopeful that that land will be reinstated at some stage under the new administration, which is obviously much more pro-nuclear, rather sensibly. And there was no reason for the land to be taken away in the first place, in our view, because you have a national park there, which is the buffer for that area, which is there to protect that area, and rightly so, it should be protected. But we are outside that park, and the park was set up to be a buffer area, so there's no need to extend that into the area we were, really. And certainly the environmental impacts studies that were done showed that actually there was very little impact at all, if any, and therefore there was really no reason to put a moratorium in, which they did. So we would be hopeful that we'd get that area back, which is the federal lands. The state lands that we have, we can operate in, but obviously it was better to have the whole package together. So we put the whole lot on, sort of more or less on care and maintenance while this is all sorted out. But we're hopeful that that will change relatively shortly. And there are noises, certainly, from Washington that may well happen. So we're hopeful of that, and that obviously would give us back our full acreage there, which has a significant upside. The target that we have there are these breccia pipes, which are high grade. They're sort of the highest in the U.S. certainly, and they are literally sort of tall, thin. Shape, and they're sort of up to 1% U308, which is obviously quite good grade, and they're highly profitable. They range from sort of 3 million to 6 million pounds of uranium in them as a resource, and we've got multiple targets in that area. They were rather successfully mined back in the last uranium boom by Energy Fuels Nuclear, which is the leading company at that time in that area. They do offer us a significant upside, which is something that we haven't sort of looked at for a while because of the administration. The previous administration really wasn't very pro it, but obviously times are changing, as they say.
Could you comment further, obviously, on companies like Aviva that are building multiple nuclear reactors and where you foresee the sort of need for that mining mineral, which is uranium, going forwards?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a big benefit to us. It's a very big picture question you're asking me, and difficult to answer because there's quite a few issues whether these are going to go forward as quickly as one is others planned. But I do believe long term that nuclear is the answer for the future of power supply. It has a fantastic safety record. You take away the two issues of Fukushima, obviously being one of them, but if you build them in the right place and they're run properly, then the safety record has been exceptional.
And indeed, I'll agree with you on that one. And there are obviously processing plants now for the offtake and the waste disposal of that sort of end entity. So,
yeah.
And there are obviously procedures in place to deal with that. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. Alongside renewable energy sources. I think the whole world is starting to wake up to uranium, and hopefully long term we can move back to what the prices were back in sort of 2007 or so.
Yes, I mean, I'd be surprised if they head up to the, you know, the heady heights of sort of 110 order it was that we hit, but they certainly should be considerably higher than they are at the moment. There's little doubt about that in my mind.
If we can have a update or a briefing on your asset that is based around gypsum. Now, a lot of people would have heard the word, but a lot of people won't understand what it is, what it's used for, and how much of a scalable commodity it is.
Yeah, so I mean, just to be clear, we are negotiating that potential transaction. It isn't our asset yet, although I do hope it ends up being a project that we can continue with. So this is the project that we're looking at is in Cuba. It is a big deposit, billions of tons, and gypsum is used for the construction industry. For wallboard, internal walls mainly, and for decorative outside, but it's 15 and 13 mil wallboard are used throughout the world. Knauf and people like that are the manufacturers sort of globally. And the project that we're looking at is to be to build a plant in Cuba. It's not a great expense. I don't really want to go into figures, but it's not a vast amount of money. And to be the sole manufacturer of wallboard for Cuba, with a joint venture with the government, and to then basically to replace their import market, which obviously with Cuba, with the market opening up and the amount of tourism growth that's going on there, building of new hotels, etc., is a potentially big business there. So if we can get it, I think it would be a very good place to be in the current market.
First mover advantage as well. Is there
exactly
anything further that you would like to add there, Matthew?
No, I think we've sort of more or less covered it. I mean, obviously the oil and gas is our main focus, and really the size of that gives us the opportunity to be from quite a small company into something really quite big. And I think the upside there is really quite exciting for us.
Well, you've got lots of multiple assets across multiple sectors, and hopefully we can follow your new stories going forwards. And we look forward to hearing from you again, Matthew.
Yep. Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to explain all about us.
Yep, and it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, great pleasure. Thanks, Stephen.